Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, Serena Williams, Maria Sharapova. Global sporting stars with an Aussie contingent on the rise. Playing to fans on every continent, from London to Paris to New York. Featuring players from nearly 200 countries, playing for over $100 million in prize money. And a share of it right here in Australia's sporting capital, with one of four majors played at Melbourne Park.
Serena puts it out wide. It's this time it's good from Serena Williams, and she wins her sixth Australian Open title here on Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah, I just really can't believe it. I really can't.
Yeah.
There's Djokovic, goes out wide, lunging forehand. Now he goes straight towards Murray's forehand. Djokovic wins the Australian Open because Murray goes straight into the net, and he looks to the heavens here. Novak Djokovic, he is the king of Melbourne Park. There is no doubt about it.
If we didn't have a love and passion for this sport, we wouldn't be here. So all these results and achievements are incentive and motivation more for me to keep on going.
This is the First Serve, talking tennis on 1116 SEN.
Morning, everyone, and welcome along to the First Serve. We are here talking tennis every Sunday morning between 11 a.m. and midday. Slightly different flavour because I'm out at the golf for today, and that is a very good thing in the salubrious SEN caravan. Absolutely loving it out here, right next to the putting green. So a big addition to Sunday Sports Central coming up after midday, and we'll obviously follow the Masters very closely with Matthew Miller holding a one-stroke lead, and the main group will tee off around about 12:30 this afternoon. But we are talking tennis in this hour as we build up to the Australian Open 2016. I can't do the show without my trusty lieutenant. He's back at SEN HQ. Check him out, metrotennis.com.au. Paul Aiken, good morning. Aikes, how are you?
Good morning, BP. How are you, mate? And to all the listeners, I'm very excited to be in here. And just look at the talent that we have with us today.
It's an amazing show. What a show. You've been hitting them okay this week?
Oh, I have, mate. I have. Getting used to that one-handed backhand watching Federer and Wawrinka this morning.
I tell you what, we'll get to the ATP World Tour Finals shortly, but one of the commentators said this week, just this little quote, certain points at this tournament that are worth the admission price alone. There have been some unbelievable shots when you've got the best eight in the world, and certainly it's going to come down to it. And we probably thought at the start of the week, Djokovic, Federer, no massive surprise in that, but geez, it's quality tennis, Paul.
It certainly is, and poor old Nadal, he's almost punished for winning his group, as then he has to play Djokovic, and I'm pretty sure he would have preferred to play Federer, but still, there's nowhere to hide in that group.
Yeah, 6-3, 6-3 overnight for Novak, and of course, great to have in the studio, because we've been speaking to her on the phone.
She's
been travelling the globe, going to different Grand Slams and tennis tournaments, former WTA professional. She's jetted over from nice hot Perth, where they just struggled to get through the A-League last night, into Melbourne. She's going to be alongside me and Todd Woodbridge hosting the live stream of the Newcombe medal at Crown tomorrow night. Bojana Bobusic. Bodge, welcome.
Thanks, BP. It's great to finally be here in the studio, and came in early this morning on the red eye from Perth, and gee, it's quite cold outside in Melbourne, I tell you that.
Bodge.
It's freezing. I was obviously in Perth yesterday playing State League pennant, and it was about 35 degrees, just my type of weather. So,
you've been running marathons though.
I did run a marathon about a month ago in at Rottnest. So,
how'd you go?
Yeah, I finished in about 4:01. So first one, I was tracking really well. I was aiming for a 3:50.
Mm-hmm.
Got to about the 30K mark and my legs started to cramp a little bit. And I was hoping to hit the wall at about 34. But look, it was my first one, like I said. Lots of things to learn, and I'm looking to do a couple more next year.
Great stuff. Great to have you here today.
Thank you.
Big show, as I mentioned, one of the Newcombe medal nominees right here with me. We're going to introduce him in just a tick. Rob Leeds, manager of Melbourne's National Academy, is going to join us a little bit later on in the hour. For those that drive down Swan Street, you can't miss it every day, where the young players are developing. And, of course, Vivian Christie always with us from the Australian Tennis Magazine. But let's welcome in our very special guest.
Well, I think they should give it to Dylan Alcott. Because
do you?
I think that's the positive story. He's battled through adversity. I think he's a smoky, and I think he oozes inspiration.
I was lucky enough to win a gold medal for Australia in Beijing, and then now I'm back playing tennis, and I'm absolutely loving it.
I just played tennis for 24 hours non-stop. It was the most ridiculous and painful idea I've ever done.
This right here is a photo of me when I was 14 years old. Now, I know what you're thinking. Dylan, mate. Are you sure that's not Ryan Gosling?
Please say hello to Ryan Gosling.
Dylan Alcott, OAM, is with me out here in the caravan at Huntingdale. He's one of the nominees for the Newcomb Medal at his tennis's Night of Nights tomorrow night, alongside Sam Groth, Thanasi Kokkinakis, John Pearce, Casey Dellacqua, and Sam Stosur. But what a year, winning the Australian Open all the way back in January, and just recently taking out the US Open over there in New York. Dylan, great to have you here.
G'day, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Big golf fan as well. You're out here to taking a bit of the golf today.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm a horrible golfer, though, I must say, but it is, it's great to be out here, yeah.
What an honour to get a nomination for the Newcomb Medal. When you first heard that news, what was the immediate reaction?
Oh, look, it's humbling to be nominated. And I mean, I had a great year. I really did play some good tennis, and it was great to come back and hear that. And you know what? They've always had an athlete with a disability category, which is great. But to be recognised as an elite athlete first and foremost, who just happens to have a disability and happens to use a wheelchair as how I play, it's humbling. And I really can't thank Tennis Australia enough for the nomination. It's going to be a great night.
Because tennis is your first love. You went to basketball, hey, won a gold medal in Beijing, outstanding, and then you've come back to tennis in the last couple of years. And I just want to go back just recently, which is fresh in people's minds, that epic match you played in New York at the US Open. That was something else.
It was unbelievable, yeah. I was number two in the world at the time, and the world number one, David Wagner, he's American, and the winner got the world number one ranking and the US Open, and I was actually killing him. I was up 6-1, 2-love, and then got real tight, and thinking about it, end up going about 3.5 hours, and I won 7-5 in the third, and yeah, to do it over away from Australia, you know, in a hostile environment in America where he was from, it was incredible. We actually had Roger Federer's parents watch the whole match in front of thousands of people, and we went upstairs afterwards, and it was incredible how many people watched it and saw it, which was great for our sport.
Unbelievable. Bodge, Paul, over to you guys.
Dylan, tell us, mate, some of the people you've met on your travels as a player.
I think that's one of the best things about the wheelchair tennis circuit is it really is, a lot of it's in conjunction with the able-bodied tournaments, and for most sports it's not really like that. And I think the US Open's where you meet, to share the locker room with, you know, Roger and Rafa, and see how they all go about it, it's just incredible. And I mean, Roger Federer, you know, 5 minutes before playing the final, he's doing his hair in the mirror, relaxed, not, you wouldn't even know he's about to play a tennis match, when, you know, Rafa and these guys are like, you know, boxing and skipping and working out. It's just so funny seeing their different the different way they go about it. And I think, you know, the US Open's great for people watching. After I won, Roger Federer's dad came up and said, I want you to meet someone. And it was Roger was having dinner with himself, Bradley Cooper, Leonardo DiCaprio. It's just a different world over there. So it was fun.
Dylan, your story is absolutely amazing and so inspirational. And look, at the end of last year, you played tennis for 24 hours, raised money for the Starlight Foundation. You then went on to win the Australian Open. You then went on to win the US Open. Now you're nominated for a Newcomb medal. What's 2016 looking like for you? What's left to conquer?
I was going to say, I've got a lot to live up to next year, but it's, I've had a good year. But it's
been a little carrot dangling for 2016.
I was going to say, there's only been a handful of athletes in the history of the Olympics or Paralympics that have won two gold medals in two different sports across two different games. So that's what I'm looking at. Obviously, I want to defend the Grand Slams, but that gold medal is everything. And I'm going to be training, you know, every day thinking about that and leaving no stone unturned, because I'd love to be that person that can do that.
We might open up the lines too. 9429 1116, Dylan Alcott, our special guest, one of the nominations for the Newcomb Medal tomorrow night. If you're a tennis fan, you want to pose a question to Dylan, you are certainly welcome to join us. 9429 1116. And all our callers, a chance to win a family pass for an Australian Open guided tour down at Melbourne Park, thanks to Tennis World. You too can have a Grand Slam experience with Tennis World, court hire, coaching, function rooms, and a whole lot more. Tennisworld.net.au. Going to every caller that does call in. So just outside of the two major victories this year, just sort of take us through your year and some of the far-flung places you get to and just the overall wheelchair tennis scene.
Yeah, so tennis, it's been great for me. I mean, apart from getting a sensational tan travelling the world, but I do... I do love it, and we're on the circuit. You know, I was away 6 months of the year, same kind of as the able-bodied. The 8 weeks in Europe I did, Asia, South Africa we went to. It's unbelievable. And it was very tough for Paralympians, you know, 10 years ago. You had to pay to do everything. And these days, you know, we're marketable as athletes, so we're starting to get sponsors and can join the world tour like our able-bodied counterparts. And I'm lucky to say that I'm, you know, currently reaping the benefits of that. The athletes have passed. It was a lot tougher. And as we move forward, hopefully more young athletes can get involved and get to the opportunities that I've had, because I'm really lucky. I think I won 9 or 10 titles, I think it was, and two of them being the Grand Slam. So it was... all the hard work, you know, it was a lot of training. It didn't pay off. And I mean, we all love tennis, but it is a lot of lonely nights on the roads and things like that. But I'm lucky to be back home in Melbourne and enjoying myself and really looking forward to tomorrow night.
Yeah, beauty.
Just on that, Dylan, I love watching wheelchair athletes play, and the training involved, the physical and the conditioning, what does that entail?
Yeah, I think a lot of people actually, we train just as much as our able-bodied counterparts, as I said. So yes. I train 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. So, you know, 5 on-court sessions, 3 gym sessions, a sprint session, sometimes even a swim. And I think the thing people don't realise is I'll go to the gym, I'll use my upper body, and then I'll play tennis, and I'll use my upper body, and then I'll get in my car, and I'll use my upper body, and it's non-stop.
Yeah, I think so you've got Rafa covered there with the guns,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, it comes with the territory. He's probably a lot better at leg press than I am, I'll tell you that much. But, you know, you really have to look after ourselves, because if I, you know, do my shoulder or something like that, I can't even get out of bed. I can't go to the bathroom. I can't do things like that. So you do have to look after our bodies. And these days, to be the best in the world or to be in the top 10 or whatever, you have to train non-stop as an elite athlete, because if you don't put in the hours, you're just not going to win. And in the Paralympic in the past, there wasn't as much training and that put into it, but yeah, these days, if you want to win those gold medals and those grand slams, it's a full-time athlete's job. So it is a lot of work, but I'm definitely enjoying it.
And you also work as a motivational speaker, a speaker inspiring the youth of today to change the way they perceive people with disabilities. Obviously in the intro there, there was a little bit there from your TED Talk, which I actually watched this year in Sydney, and it was absolutely amazing to watch you do that. And that's not an easy thing to prepare for, is it?
Oh, it's a lot harder than playing tennis, I'll tell you that much. But I really want to be a bit of a trailblazer and get a job actually in the mainstream media when I retire, and other television or radio. There's just not enough positive role models with disability out there. And I use the example, you know, imagine if Bruce McAvaney was in a wheelchair, or Malcolm Turnbull, or whatever. The next time somebody saw someone in a wheelchair or with any disability, it would just go a long way to normalising that. And I'd love to do that. And as I said, I just don't think there's enough of that out there. But that's why what Tennis Australia has been so great. You know, they're putting us out there as an elite athlete who is trying to change that perception, and I'm very lucky to be out there on the forefront of doing that.
Absolutely. Bouncing Billy on the SMS here, Dylan. Give him the Nuke medal now, superstar. So there's one vote. I'm sure there'll be plenty more. I just want to get your take on, you know, who you're up against tomorrow night. It's really interesting for us that follow tennis, and we look at the names that have been nominated, and it's sort of a compelling story for just about everyone there. I mean, this is probably when it first started. Sam was a bit of a Monty. She was going to win early on. That's when she was at the peak. Won the US Open, staying in the top 20. Nick obviously emerging last year. Nick and Bernard obviously not in contention this year. But what's your take on just the other contenders?
Oh, look, it's unbelievable to be nominated with the other guys. And, you know, we all train together in Melbourne a lot, and I've become good mates with Grothy and Tanasi in particular. Yeah. And it's going to be a great night. And I've always said, how do you compare apples and oranges? Like, it's everyone's had such different years, such different stories. So I'm not jealous of the job of Nuke and the guys who's picking it, because it's going to be tough. But I honestly think any of us six can win. So it's going to be very interesting.
But as we played in the intro, Paul, you were adamant this time last week that you thought Dylan should win the Nuke medal.
Oh, mate, I'm good at getting on bandwagons, but he's got my vote.
Good on you, Paul. I like it.
No, I'm with Paul as well. I think you're in for a really great shot, Dylan. And look, like you said, there's 6 nominees. First time there's actually been 6. In the past, it's always been 4. So I think that's a true reflection of how Australian tennis is travelling at the moment. And I wish you all the very best of luck for tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. And look, there's just so many great players that we all train with down in Melbourne, and it's such a tight-knit group, and we all get treated each other like professionals. And to be there on the night of nights with a chance of winning the biggest gong, the Brownlow of tennis, as it's known, the Nuke, it's going to be a humbling experience, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it certainly is a great night. Stick with us, because you're going to join in the tennis discussion, because there's a fair bit to get through. The ATP World Tour Finals. We'll look back at the Fed Cup last week, which the Czech Republic have just had an absolute Monty on all that, and lots of other tennis news floating around as players head into their off-season, training, coaching, changes, a whole lot to come. You can join us anytime, 9429 9429, 1116. The first serve, we're underway
on 1116 SEN. You're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
Welcome back to The First Serve, coming to you from Huntingdale. Brett Phillips out here for the Australian Masters this afternoon. Paul Aiken and Bojana Babusic back at SEN HQ. And Dylan Alcott is our special guest. He's one of the nominees for the Nuke medal tomorrow night, alongside Sam Groth, Thanasi Kokkinakis, John Peers, Casey DeLacqua, Sam Stosur, And Bodge, you're going to be doing the blue carpet stuff tomorrow night.
I will.
Have you got your frock? You're sorted?
No, I actually don't. I have my dress fitting at 3 p.m. today, so hopefully there's something still left there for me.
Yeah, Bodge, I got mine fitted last week, not my dress, my suit. So there's plenty to choose from. You'll be fine.
Oh, thanks. I look forward to chatting to you on the blue carpet,
definitely,
Dylan.
Definitely.
And of course, for those that haven't got a seat tomorrow night inside Crown, you can watch it on Tennis Australia's YouTube channel, streaming live from 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Todd Woodbridge and myself doing the pre-show. Bodge will be on the blue carpet. It is a great night, and obviously for a lot of tennis fans around the country, must-seeing. So tune in from 7 o'clock Melbourne time tomorrow night. ATP World Tour Finals, guys. We can all join in the discussion here. This has been quality tennis. It looks like a great setting, Paul, the O2 Arena. A place that if you're a tennis fan or a journalist or a player, and Roger Federer has always talked about this event being one of his favourite on the tour. It just looks like a great place to go and play tennis.
It does. I thought it was interesting, Nadal talking this week that he wasn't happy with the bounce, and predictably, he wants one day the World Tour Finals to be played on clay. So that would obviously.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a very weird scenario to see Djokovic lose early in the week and now be in the final. But I guess the last time he did that was in 2008, I think, and he actually won the tournament.
But that was like Radwanska in the WTA
correct.
World Tour final in
twice,
Singapore. She lost twice and then ended up winning it.
Wow.
So it could go either way, really. Yeah.
Been some amazing tennis this week. And Dylan, I want you to comment on this as well. I was watching Andy Murray against Stan Wawrinka. It was a high-quality match, and normally the entourage are sitting right there courtside, and Magnus Norman was there with Stan and the coaching team. But Andy's team sat high up, and I don't know if this was a thing they'd spoke about pre-match, or maybe it's something they're preparing for next year, because as we know, Andy constantly looks to his players' box, he vents at them. There's probably times when they don't want to look at him.
I think it's probably detrimental to his game sometimes. Yeah, they sit very close, and it is hard. You hear voices that you're used to when you're on the court. And I was actually at the US Open with my dad, and when it got tight, I could just hear the tension in his voice, and it was like irritating because I was like, "You need to relax. You need to because it gets you up and about." So
I found watching it, it kept Andy, Bodge and Paul as well, much calmer.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to explode a couple of times. We had no one to look to because they had the lights down in the crowd at the O2 Arena. They were up sort of on the second level, and he couldn't see where they were to actually get some sort of response. So he had to, I've got to fend my own battle here and just dig myself out of any holes that I'm in.
Yeah,
exactly right. It is. I think it must be because it looks like he loses concentration when he does it sometimes. And it happened with Novak in the final at the Oz. So it's an interesting tactic.
I think that's a problem for him to solve in the future, in that he looks to his camp to throw him a life vest. And, it's interesting that he has to go to that extent to place them higher.
Mm. Djokovic's unbeaten run ended by Federer, as we mentioned. Let's have a quick listen to Roger Federer in the final against, of course, Novak, coming up, tomorrow morning our time.
It's a great challenge, and I enjoy that. I get up for that. That's still one of the big reasons I'm still playing tennis today. Overall, I'm very pleased. I think it was a great match from my side, and obviously one I can build on for the rest of the tournament.
Now, Bodge, he's gone the beard, Rog, this week. Any comment on that? Normally clean-shaven.
Yeah, I'm used to Feds being very polished, but look, whatever floats his boat. But I think tomorrow night, talking about facial hair, I know Thanasi Kokkinakis has been trying to grow a ponytail. Well, he was at the US Open, so it must just be a new thing at the moment on the men's tour.
Right. Well, he was dressed by Hugo Boss last year. He looks superb. Nick,
and he said
Nick
he had
was
the,
in the purple suit. And
the Gatsby hair too.
Yeah, I'm dressed by Boss tomorrow. I'm excited to chuck it on. So.
Nice.
Are you wearing a colour though, Dylan?
No. Black tie. Got to look sharp. Yep. I'm going the full penguin suit. So.
And just also at the ATP World Tour Finals this week, Leighton Hewitt quickly jetted over to be honoured, which is fantastic. Let's have just a quick listen to Leighton before we talk about him.
Obviously, to go out and play the Grand Slams has been fun, and go back to some of my favourite ATP events. You know, it finishes at the Australian Open in January, and I think that's a fitting place to finish up.
And just to see the reaction, Paul, I think everyone was on their feet inside the O2 Arena who have watched his whole career, and back in the day when he won a couple of majors before Federer and Nadal and co really got going and have dominated the last 10 years of men's tennis. It's like all the players like Agassi, the second part of their career, I mean, people might be put off by them early on with some of the antics, but by the end, they become real statesmen of the game and get that that kudos they deserve.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I can always remember 10 or 12 years ago watching him win this very event and just the way he moved. There was just no one quicker on a tennis court. And you're quite right. I think we've grown to really appreciate how he played and what he stood for.
And his work ethic too. I don't know if you saw on social media, but on Instagram he posted he flew, say, 50-odd hours, was in London for 12 hours, then flew straight back home same day out on the running track doing some boxing with his strength and conditioning coach. So he's fired up and getting ready for that Aussie summer.
Yeah, back for the Nukes tomorrow night.
Yep.
Give us your take, Dylan, on just Leighton Hewitt, the person. I mean, it's going to be a very... I mentioned a really emotional Australian Open. Well, we always say every year we hope Leighton gets some sort of kind draw. I mean, in his last one, it'd be lovely to see him maybe get through two or three rounds. We know he's going to be competing hard. We know he'll prepare accordingly. He'll play the Hopman Cup. But just your own take on what he's meant to Australian tennis.
Oh, he's an unbelievable statesman of the game. He just commands respect when he walks into the room at Tennis Australia. Everybody just stops. And you're right about the training. You know, I'm training there next to him every day at the moment. And he trains like he's still world number one. Like the amount of time and effort that he's putting in. And he's been, I've had a bit to do with him recently. And he's been a great supporter of my tennis. And he pulled me up for the Nuke as well and things like that. So he's just... He's an unbelievable player. I think he's been world number one ranked for the fourth most weeks in history. I think a lot of people forget that now that Roger and Novak and all that came along. And I hope he can get to the third, fourth round. Could you imagine Melbourne Park? Could you imagine Rondo Arena? If he gets up to the fourth round and plays Roger, it would just be unbelievable.
Would you remember when Jimmy Connors, guys, I think would have been 38, 39. And he had that amazing, was his last US Open. And he got, I think, the fourth round or quarterfinals. Might have even been the semis. I can't remember. But every time he won, that whole Arthur Ashe Stadium just, it was electrifying. And he's going around high-fiving everyone and just on the wave of emotion. So you never know what can happen.
And he's the kind of bloke, he'll do it. Like, it's like the Davis Cup when he came in and won. He's the kind of guy that will beat a seed, get through. He's just an amazing competitor.
And if there's one person to thrive off an Aussie atmosphere, it is Leighton Hewitt. He'll absolutely churn it. Yep.
And I'm old enough to remember that Connors match BP. And
you
I
are
think,
old enough.
I think the comparison there with Connors is quite right.
That'd be great. That just adds an extra edge to the 2016 Australian Open. John Peers and, of course, Jamie Murray, they've ended their doubles partnership. I mean, what a stage, guys, just for John Peers to actually make it into the best eight doubles pairings, to be in London and sharing a centre stage with, you know, the elite. Just a real reward for all of the work he's put in.
Yeah, 100%. I knew John from back in the college days. He went to the University of Baylor, and we were actually on the World University Games, and Paul was our coach. How funny.
I watched them play.
We actually played mixed doubles together. But look, you know, for someone to just solely focus on doubles isn't an easy task. And he's obviously found a really good partnership with Jamie Murray. And to make the top eight is an unbelievable achievement in itself. But, you know, they made a couple of Grand Slam finals this year. And for them to part their ways is a huge decision. So I hope it benefits both of them.
Let's have just a quick listen to John Peers.
We've had a great journey together, and I think it was definitely a mutual decision for both of us that we were ready to move on, and we're both giving each other a great platform to move forward, and we're wishing each other the best, and unfortunately didn't turn out the way we wanted to at the end with this tournament, but we've had a great journey together and we've done a lot of great things, so we can't really just pinpoint this little moment, but we've got to look at the whole picture and, ready to look forward.
Yeah, making two major finals this year, it's a fantastic achievement. We'll wait and see what is next, and Dylan, whether he's going to get a Guernsey in Australia's Davis Cup tournament. That's been a bit of a talking point late in the year. Obviously, with Leighton Hewitt exiting, another spot becomes available. It's an interesting predicament for Leighton and the selectors next year.
Exactly right. And I was actually at the US Open when they got to the final, when I was playing my final. And it's a strange decision that they're splitting, because they're just starting to play some unbelievable tennis together. But look, I hope I haven't had much to do with Piersey, but he does have the runs on the board, I think, to get a Davis Cup Guernsey. Jump in there with the doubles, whether it's with Grothy or whatever. So hopefully he does get an opportunity.
No doubt. Paul, Bodge, match Djokovic and Federer up tonight. It's going to be their 46th career meeting. So we're used to seeing these two go head-to-head. I mean, it almost feels like Novak is just invincible at the moment. And Nadal sort of suggested that in a sense in his post-match press conference. That forehand, I reckon, has gone to a whole new level. That cross-court, real quick whippy wrist action, it gets that much angle on it. I mean, Nadal, who can normally retrieve balls, just couldn't get near it this week in that match. How's it going to pan out?
Yeah, well, you're quite right, BP. In terms of the Federer versus Djokovic tonight, I think Federer's just got to keep forcing error from the baseline like he did with his forehand. The interesting thing for mine is in the round robin match they had, he wasn't coming to the net near as much as he has in the past against Djokovic. He was a little bit more measured with his approach there. And he was really picking up Djokovic's serves, the T-serves. He was almost reading them so well. So I think if he repeats that match again, I think he'll win.
And, I mean, Federer holds a 22-21 win-loss record against Djokovic, so he couldn't really get two players any closer to one another than what we have coming tonight. So, I mean, it's going to be an unbelievable match, whichever way it swings.
And the other semi-final, of course, the record there was 23-22 in favour of Nadal. So you've got four guys that are just so close.
We speak about it every week. We're just blessed. The men's game at the top, Dylan, the quality is unbelievable. And you look at, you know, this week, Thomas Berdych, decent player. 0-3. He just can't get over the barrier. Ferrer, 0-3 this week. Nishikori's younger, so he's got some time. He's got a lot of niggling injuries, though, Kei Nishikori. It's going to be interesting long-term, but it's tough for those guys who are inside the top 10. It must feel so far away from the top two or three.
And it's unbelievable when you hit at these tournaments, you see the guys that are, you know, 10 in the world, and the difference when you hit next to Roger or Rafa, they just hit it so unbelievably well. You can't even put into words when you're that close watching them play. And, I mean, I hope Roger gets up. He's an unbelievable champion, one of my heroes, but I just want him to win that last Wimbledon. Every time I watch, it's just so close.
Well, I think just for all of you, I mean, it seems like that's the thing that's really driving him. We know that there's a little edge to the relationship between Djokovic and Federer, and that goes a long way back and is well documented and might come out more, you know, post their careers. There's a healthy respect, but that clearly is driving Roger because of Novak's dominance, and everyone's saying, can Roger win one more? He feels like he's still in peak condition. He might play for another 2 or 3 years, and clearly he just wants to get one on the younger guys who have, you know, obviously got the edge at Grand Slam level in the last, 4 or 5 years.
Exactly right. And you can see in his face just how much he wants that. And I really hope he does. And he's still hitting the ball so well. And the best thing is he's changed his game, changed his racket. He's doing everything in his power to keep up with him. And obviously he's playing some great tennis at the moment. So, I mean, it's got to be next year, doesn't it? I want him to win that one more slam.
Well, I'm going to go back to Wimbledon next year. So do it there, Roger. That'd be fantastic. Bodge, just the Czech Republic winning the Fed Cup again. I mean, they love this event, don't they? I mean, all the nations approach it differently, but, gee, their fourth Fed Cup in 5 years.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable achievement for the Czech, and probably sometimes they do go a little bit unnoticed, and I was just looking at the rankings a couple of days ago. They've got 7 women ranked inside that top 100. On top of that, they have another 7 ranked inside the top between 100 and 200. So they've got so much depth coming through, and for them to win it for a fourth time, like I said, is unbelievable. And, you know, not only do they have depth on the singles court, but also the doubles. And for Maria Sharapova to turn up and play, I think it just made it even that extra special.
Yep. How exciting that it all came down to the doubles as well. Yeah.
And that's what you want to see in any Fed Cup or Davis Cup ties, to see come down to that double. Sorry, the women play the doubles, the men play on the second day.
Right.
But no, I think that makes it even more exciting. And we don't get to see a lot of women's doubles matches anyways. And to have that in a Fed Cup final was really exciting.
Would you ever change the Davis Cup format to have the doubles last?
I think it makes it more exciting having it last, because the singles can go either way. I think that's why they play the reverse, and then they end up playing the ones with the ones. But to have that doubles, I think when it comes down to those crucial matches, you know, every little point counts. And in doubles, there's not a lot of long rallies. And that's when tactics come into play. And a lot of the percentages, like your first serve, your returns, and positioning on the court is so important in doubles.
I suppose the only issue with that is the doubles player that come along may not get a live rubber. So
That's true. But you get to see players that you normally wouldn't have the opportunity of watching and playing. Yep. And, you know, a lot of the time we always focus on singles and not enough on doubles.
Absolutely. Correct. Dylan, we're going to let you go, mate. Thank you for coming in.
Good on you, guys. Thanks so much for having
Dylan.
Me. Look forward to seeing you all tomorrow night.
Likewise.
It's going to be good.
Indeed. You'll be looking sharp. Who's going to win the golf?
Oh,
do you think
Peter Senior should get up, shouldn't he? How good would that be?
That'd be a great story. He's only 2 shots off the pace. Never missed the cut in 31 years of playing here.
That is unbelievable. Yeah, it's
phenomenal. They're still playing the seniors too, and they earn some pretty good money over in the US doing that.
Definitely, yeah.
Well done.
Good on you guys.
Dylan Alcott, of course, what a year for him winning the Australian Open, the US Open. He's one of the nominees for the Newcomb Medal tomorrow night. Going to be a great night. We'll come back with more of the first serve shortly.
on 1116 SEN. You're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
Welcome back to The First Serve, coming to you from Huntingdale. Brett Phillips out here for the Masters, and Bojana Bobusic and Paul Aitken are back at SEN headquarters. About to catch up with Vivian Christie from the Australian Tennis Magazine. Sue Emberick, who will be tuning in tomorrow night, she tells me, to the Nukes. Will you be announcing results of all the minor awards? Absolutely. This is the great part about the Nukes, Bodge, is that it recognises the elite, it recognises the grassroots. They come from all over Australia. They get to dress up, come to Crown Casino. It's a big night, and if you watching the live stream, the dinner show in the middle, we do interview all the grassroots winners. So they get a bit of camera time as well, which is not a bad thing. So, Sue, look forward to you tuning in tomorrow night. One lady who will be there looking immaculate is Vivian Christie, editor of the Australian Tennis Magazine. Morning, Viv.
Morning, Brett. Thank you for that. No pressure.
Are you sorted frock-wise?
I actually am sorted
frock-wise.
Nice. So looking forward to getting dressed up and seeing everyone there.
Now, Grigor Dimitrov, it'd be fair to say he attracts, some of the leading ladies of tennis.
Yeah.
What is he up to now?
Yeah, he hasn't given us a lot to talk about as far as his tennis goes this year. He's dropped to world number 28, but plenty of other activity going on. He, of course, was partnered with Maria Sharapova for the past 2 years, but they broke up around about Wimbledon time. Well, that's certainly when we heard about it anyway. But he's since been apparently, reportedly, dating Nicole Scherzinger from the Pussycat Dolls. So, yeah, he's keeping very busy.
Viv, I'm interested in McEnroe weighing into the Kyrgios debate this week. I sort of feel like McEnroe could no doubt empathise with him, but I reckon the jury could be out on whether he's got any strategies to help him, because there's no real evidence that McEnroe's ever cured his own demons.
No, and also I don't recall McEnroe ever coaching either. I was trying to recall whether that had happened, but I certainly can't remember any examples. Yes, but I think he might have been a little bit disappointed at this time last year. He thought that, Kyrgios was headed to the top five, in a matter of really fast time. So I think he might have been a bit disappointed that that hasn't happened already. Did offer to give him a helping hand. But, I think Nick's still got plenty of time to make that move.
And keeping on the Nick topic, himself and Ala Tomaljevic have been practising in Queensland from what I've seen on Instagram.
Yes, they have been practicing in Queensland together. They also went to an awards ceremony together. They say they're just good friends and they're keeping it very quiet. So, I can't really speculate on that. But, yeah, they have been spending a lot of time together.
Viv, we are building up to the Nuke medal. I mean, it's a really interesting field tomorrow night to decide who wins the sixth crown. What's your own take on it?
Well, yeah, it's really hard to say who will win. I think it's probably one of the most even fields that we've really ever had at the Nuke. So, I can't pick it. Maybe it's part of it is that I don't want to pick it. But, yeah, I think it will just be a great night. And as you said earlier, a chance to honour all of the coaches and the clubs and the schools and, the event that, put those guys in that position in the first place.
Well, it's where the stars are born, on the mini courts in the back blocks of all parts of Australia. Viv, thank you. We'll catch you tomorrow night. Of course, tennismag.com.au. You can subscribe to the Australian Tennis Magazine. Get it delivered to your front door monthly through 2016. A must read. Good to talk to you.
Great. Thanks, guys. See you tomorrow.
Vivian Christie from the Australian Tennis Magazine at 11:45, the first serve here in 11:16 SEN. We're going to catch up, guys, with Rob Leeds. He is the National Academy Manager in Melbourne. We know that he's grown significantly, and the additional courts, of course, along the route to Melbourne Park along Swan Street. Rob, really good to have you on the show.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Tell us a bit more about the National Academy and where it's at the moment. We see lots of players in and out of there right throughout the year, but just for our listeners, give us sort of the lowdown on how it actually functions.
Yeah, well, we've got a bunch of athletes training in there on a weekly basis, between 16 and 20 athletes. Training at that incredible facility there at Melbourne Park, the new National Tennis Centre with it's got 8 indoor courts there, 5 outdoor courts, and then the 8 European clay, which gives us an incredible opportunity to ensure that our players are playing on the better surfaces that are being played on a world stage. And, the athletes would come in, the full-time athletes are there from about 8:30 to 4:35 o'clock on a on a daily basis, doing between 2 and 4 hours on court, a couple hours in the gym, further education, catching up with physios, psychs, dietitians, doctors, etc. So it's a full blown high performance environment, and yeah, they're definitely putting in the hard yards and working hard to achieve the goals that they're looking to achieve. We also have a bunch of athletes who are going to more traditional school settings, so they're rocking up at 6:30 some mornings, and then they're back again after school and training till 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. So there's definitely a lot of work being done on a weekly basis there, that's for sure.
Rob, tell us a little bit about some of the juniors coming out of the Melbourne Academy at the moment, and without putting any pressure on them, who do you think could take the next step?
Well, there's a young girl who's made a great move this year in Jamie Fullis. She's about 16 years old, Melbourne girl from out Preston Way, and she's someone who's come along in leaps and bounds this year. I've been really impressed with her progress. She's a really good athlete, really good ball striker, and does actually really well on the clay. It can do some different stuff with the ball that I guess a lot of the other girls in her peer group can't do. So we're pretty excited about her progress. Daria Gavrilova, well, she's a bit out of the junior range at the minute, but she's been in our environment for a couple of years now, and she's doing incredibly well on the world stage. We've got some young players like Lucas Verdin, similar age to Jamie, Matthew Romeos, and Mark Polmans, who's actually just won the doubles up in Wollongong at the pro circuit up there, and also got to the semi-final. He's doing fantastic. Young Omar Jasika, who's currently in Japan at the minute, competing in the ATP events. He's got his ranking up around 300, and he
looks great.
He's exciting and very talented lefty, and he can do some fantastic things.
And what's the criteria of getting into the National Academy? Because I know that you can either be full scholarship or you could be a wild card, but for the listeners out there who don't know what that means, what is the criteria to be part of the academy there?
Yeah, well, that sounds like Boyana. Is that you?
Oh, Boyana? Hi, Rob. It is.
So there's differing criteria, I guess, for each Berkey range. So it looks at an ATP ranking, a WTA ranking, or an ITF junior ranking, and that varies, and also gets a tougher or higher rankings and so on and so forth are benchmarked as the athlete progresses. So I guess a full scholarship, if you hit the benchmarks, full scholarship is achieved, and you can then got access to greater funding.
Yep.
And I guess a wild card scholarship is a scholarship that's provided to athletes who are in the ballpark, not quite hitting it, but in the ballpark, and definitely it's of the belief amongst the group that they can definitely achieve that at some point in the near future.
Rob.
So, yeah, it's a progressive scale, I guess.
Yep.
Sorry, mate. Where do you think the game is heading now, and what do you think is the template for a top 100 player at the moment?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question, and that's a question that we discuss on a daily basis. Like, you've got to have weapons. You can't really have any weaknesses. You've got to have something that really hurts your opponent. I think you need incredible physicality. I think that's more evident on the men's side at the moment, but on the women's side of the game, there is absolutely no doubt that there's been significant gains there. The women's game is definitely catching up to the men's game, I think, in that regard. You've got to be an unbelievable competitor. You really can't be weak because the competition out there is just getting tougher and tougher.
Sure.
I think the ability to hurt,
yep,
and keep the ball in, the ability to be incredibly physical over a long period of time, and just I guess just an incredible insatiable appetite for competition. I think they're probably the key things, and that's not overly rocket science, but you know, the better players in the world are very good in those three categories.
Rob, great to talk to you. I reckon we need to probably talk to you again at some point across the summer, because there's a fair bit into what you do in the National Academy, but we'll certainly get you back on the show, and we love talking about the players that are emerging and rising and love following their journey, so let's hope plenty more. There's a nice production line to come over the next few years. Really appreciate your time this morning.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for that.
Rob Leeds, the National Academy manager right here in Melbourne. We'll take a break. We'll come back. A couple of topics we want to cover off right here on The First Serve.
On 1116 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
The best thing that we can do is to go by our live our normal lives and not change too much, because then the terrorists are the ones that are winning, and we need to go out there and do what we always do. And I don't want to live my life in fear each time I step on a tennis court.
Yeah, the terrorist attacks in France, they have caused lots of disruptions to different sporting events over the last week or two. But as we know, Paul and Bojana, the Davis Cup is the final piece of the tennis season. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out between, of course, Belgium and Great Britain, who are looking to win for the first time in a long, long time. And you wonder this week at the World Tour Finals whether Andy Murray was maybe a little bit distracted or thinking ahead to that. I know that tournament is pretty important, but, gee, to lift a Davis Cup trophy would be a huge thing for a nation that had struggled for a long time.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, BP. Like, now, between now and when the tie begins, his recovery and to get himself, you know, mentally and emotionally up for the tie is going to be very important.
Bodge, who do you think is going to win the Davis Cup? I mean, they're two nations that we haven't sort of been accustomed to seeing at this point of the season.
Well, you'd think Andy Murray would be in favour to get that one rubber for Great Britain. But if you look at the rankings, I mean, their number two player for Belgium's ranked about 85. That's Steve Darcis. And then Kyle Edmonds ranked about 99. So from after that number one spot, it could really go anyway. So I think it's really going to come down to that wire.
And he beat Goffin, Love and One two
in
or three
sets.
Weeks ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, geez, like I said, it's going to be real close.
I just want to finish off with this, Roger. I'm keen to get your take on this in particular. Just months after almost walking away from tennis, Victorian Tammy Paterson has been awarded a wildcard entry into Australian Open 2016. Now, I wasn't totally aware that the format had changed. As we know, the wildcard tournament is always in December. Yep. You won it back a few years ago. One male, one female gets direct entry, and then wildcards are handed out according to different criteria. This has come ahead of that, and Tammy's ranking, I think, is somewhere around 460 in the world. I'll be honest and say my first reaction was, is that a good thing to be awarding a player who I think was best performed in the last couple of Pro Tour events?
The last two $50,000 tournaments.
Give us your own take on that.
Well, sort of along the same lines as you, BP, I actually didn't know of these sort of new incentives that Tennis Australia had brought in. So there was that one, the best performed in the last two 250Ks. Also, the winner of the 18s Girls Nationals at the December Showdown, whoever wins that also wins a main draw wildcard. And listening to Nicole Pratt, or actually reading what she had to say yesterday when they announced that Tammy did receive that wildcard, it was purely based on the fact that her and Alicia Molik are really wanting players, females, to feel like they've earned their spot into the main draw of the Australian Open. And speaking just off experience, I know when I won the wildcard playoff, I actually got those matches under my belt. I knew I had the confidence. I felt that I'd earned my way, whereas the previous year I was just given one directly into the main draw. So I think it's just they're taking a different approach. And for Tammy, I mean, she's obviously well deserving of that. She has struggled with injuries, but for her to be the best performing Australian in those 250Ks, she's obviously hitting a great ball. And what an opportunity for her now to build on her ranking.
Well, I've always thought, every time I've seen her, to be honest, at the wildcard, I've always thought, why isn't she ranked higher?
Yep.
And there's clearly some little technical things that if we broke it all down, but gee, she hits the absolute leather
off sweet ball.
A tennis ball.
Yep.
Great to have you here, Bodge. Look
Thank
forward
you.
To catching up at the Nukes tomorrow night.
So
at
do
Crown.
I, can't wait.
And we'll all be dolled up. Live coverage, of course, on YouTube.com, the Tennis Australia channel there. You can tune in from 7 o'clock. Paul, hit them well this week, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks very much, PP. Thanks, Brianna.
Check out Paul, of course, metrotennis.com.au, the best coach in the business.